My name is Tim Johnson, and I'm in the studio this morning for A Talk at 10. And my guest is Land and Writer in Residence, Don Lee. Don is the author of three books, Yellow, A Collection of Stories, Country of Origin, and Rack and Ruin, which are both novels. He is a professor at Temple University in Philadelphia, and he'll be reading this Saturday, July 17th, at 6 p.m. at the Marfa Book Company, which is, of course, located right here in downtown Marfa beside the radio station. Mr. Lee, good morning, and thanks for being on the air with me.
Good to be with you, Tim.
One of the things I didn't mention, which I think is nonetheless important to your life as a writer, it seems, is that you edited a literary journal for many years called Plowshares. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
For 19 years, I first started as an intern, and then I was working as the office manager after I got my MFA at Emerson College, and suddenly the managing editor quit without much notice, and I was thrust into this position and worked there in the office solo for, you know, a long time. And then it really looked like it was going to go bankrupt. We were on our last legs, but then we got this affiliation made official with Emerson College, and it became a bona fide organization. And then ended up being the editor there for 19 years, working full time.
Wow. I remember, you know, I started reading Plowshares, I guess, probably in the mid 90s, and it seemed to me to be a pretty prominent literary journal at that time. Was it not prominent during that period?
Yeah, its reputation from the start was always outsized, you know, compared to its resources. But you know, I remember when I started, I was making working full time again, $1,000 a month, and sometimes I would have to defer my monthly salary to pay the printing bill. It was a real ragtag shoestring operation.
Wow, incredible. I know there have been several writers who've passed through Marfa who've had some affiliation with the journal of some kind during their life, and I think pretty much the thing they've all said is that it's an incredibly laborious task, especially if you're like a one-person kind of staff. Were you able to... I imagine you've been a writer probably your whole life, but were you able to pursue your own interests during that time, or was it wholly a sort of like benevolent sort of labor on behalf of all the other people you're publishing?
Well, that's why, you know, I'm a little bit of a late bloomer as a writer. I didn't publish my first book until I was 40, and I really got waylaid by that work with Plowshares. We got a huge grant from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund in 1992, and it was a marketing grant, and they gave us money for a lot of things except for extra staff. And so I ended up for a couple of years there working 70 hours a week at the magazine, and I really put my own writing aside. I would write maybe one short story a year or so, publish them in journals like Plowshares, but what happened was as I was getting near that threshold, the 40th birthday, you know, I told myself, I think I really want to have a book, just at least one book here that, you know, I don't want to be one of those people who are always thinking coulda, shoulda, woulda. And so I took some of those old stories, revised them, wrote some new ones, and went through the whole process just like anyone else of finding an agent and then selling the book. And lo and behold, Norton only offered me, they wouldn't buy the short story collection alone. They wanted a novel after that. And so they gave me a two-book deal. And I was actually reluctant about it because I had no plans to write a novel. I had no idea what I would write about. And I was scared about it, too. But it ended up to be, of course, the best thing that could have ever happened to me because, you know, I became a novelist. And if I continued on with my writing career, and then from then on, really writing instead of editing became my focus. And I knew that I was going to have to make that transition eventually to forge some sort of career outside of editing, that I couldn't stick with Plowshares forever.
Sure. So the collection of stories you're talking about is Yellow, and that was published in, is that 2001. 2001. And subsequently, maybe the word is prolific even. You've subsequently written two novels, and I know you're at work on a third right now. You mentioned to me off the air before that this collection, Yellow, marked the beginning of something I think you said new in your writing, in the relationship to writing about race and identity. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. That when I was in graduate school, you know, I got a lot of people saying to me, well, you should really write about what it's like to be Asian American. And at the time, I really resented it. I thought that was an unfair burden to give to me, and it was sort of a prejudicial assumption that somebody who is a writer of color always needs to write about being a person of color. And so I resisted it for a long time, but then, you know, finally I decided, all right, I'm just going to do this once. And I ended up writing the title story to the collection. It's, you know, almost a novella, Yellow. And that really turned things around for me because I realized, you know, this is really inside me here. And I wanted to address it in some way. But what I ended up doing was not something, you know, that you would think would be revolutionary, but it ended up that people regarded it that way, is that, you know, I just had Asian Americans, but, and certainly there were some sort of residual ties with their ethnicity, but really they were ordinary people. And so I've got, you know, chair makers and surfers and public defenders, you know, people from all walks of life, but and so the reaction to this was funny because, you know, people said, oh, wow, you know, you're doing something really different where you're writing about Asian Americans who are ordinary people. And, you know, and just the other day I got an email, a fan letter of sorts from this 17-year-old girl in Oakland, California. And she said that she had been going through the library and just picked my book at random. And, you know, she wrote about how gratifying it was. She's the third generation Chinese American, and she wrote about how gratifying it was to find some representations of Asian Americans that were similar to her, who weren't, you know, all about the old country or about myths or whatever, that they were just, you know, they were Asian, but that didn't define them wholly or solely.
Sure. We're talking to Don Lee, who is a Lannan writer in residence here in Marfa, and he'll be reading at the Marfa Book Company this Saturday, July 17th at 6 p.m. It's a free event, and it's open to everyone, so please come out. The readings last about 45 minutes. And you mentioned that, I guess it's become a pretty standard thing in the book world that when a person signs a contract, they sign a two-book contract, one for a collection of short stories and then for a novel yet to be written. You say you're a little bit reluctant. I'm wondering if that title story, Yellow, had been written at that time, because it really, that the story does cover so much ground in a person's life and so much time, and there it does in some ways consist of several small stories. Well, it seemed like it recommends itself for a novel.
Yeah, I think that actually that was what gave my editor at Norton confidence that I could write a novel, and that a lot of the stories are plot driven as well and longer. But you know, I do remember though that I tried to send that story out to magazines, and it was kind of a ridiculous proposition because it was, I think it was 55 pages in manuscript, and of course everybody said, well, this is too long for us to publish in a journal or a magazine, and but they all said too that, you know, maybe you should try to make this into a novel. And you know, I felt like that was a finished product and it couldn't be extended, but you know, I knew that I could probably do it if I had a large enough story. I mean, that's really the difference between short stories and novels, is that you have to have a larger landscape and you have to have a larger kind of narrative arc, and you have to put in those plot elements to warrant that kind of length.
As a person who was writing short stories over many years, how have you found in the last several years committing yourself largely, though not entirely, to the novel? Is it something that, is it like a sort of added pleasure, or is it largely like a sort of constructive challenge, or, you know, how are you relating to the novel?
Well, you know, I think what's really different about it is the process, that with short stories, you know, it's a finite project that you're thinking, all right, in a month, 2 months, I'm going to have a finished draft, and you can see the whole thing. And there's actually great pleasure. I mean, I've written a couple of short stories between novels, and there's real pleasure when you can spend 2 hours working on a single line trying to get it right. Whereas with a novel, you can't do that, especially in writing the first draft, that you've got to try to blow through it. You have to be able to, you've got to be willing to live with your own bad writing for a while. And just say, this is rough, I'll be able to fix it later on. But, you know, it's painful in that sense. But you have to lay down the story, see what you have, and then go back and revise it. And you really can't see what you have for a long time. You just have to have faith that it's going to lead somewhere. And sometimes it might not.
Do you have to impose a kind of discipline on yourself in terms of the number of hours that you're going to work on a story in a day, or the number of words you hope to get written in a day or a week? Is that something that's helpful for you?
Certainly, that when I was working at Plowshares and working on the writing the first two novels, what I did was I got Fridays off. I negotiated that, so I would go to Plowshares from Monday to Thursday, and then I wrote Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And what I would try to do is a minimum of 2 pages a day. And when you think about it, that ends up to be the first draft of a novel in a year. And then, you know, I would spend 6 months to a year revising it.
Sure. Let's talk about Rack and Ruin for a moment.
Sure.
I'd also like to talk to you about your most recent project, I guess the ongoing one, if you're willing to share.
Certainly.
I know some people are superstitious, and maybe justly so, about what they're up to. But this is a book that deals with a man who is a once famous sculptor.
That's right.
Who basically moves away from New York City for a number of reasons. I'll let you detail them if you'd like. And he moves to the West Coast to a very small town that's in some ways close to the big cities, but is nonetheless maintains a kind of rural identity. And he basically, in some ways, he's just trying to disappear back into life.
Right.
Do you want to say something about where that kind of character comes from for you?
It takes place in a fictional town called Rosarito Bay, which is based on Half Moon Bay between San Francisco and Santa Cruz. But really, you know, that was the town that I made up for Yellow. And in between Rack and Ruin and Yellow was a novel called Country of Origin, my first novel, and it took place in Tokyo in 1980. And my father was in the State Department. He was in the Foreign Service, and I spent high school in Tokyo living on the embassy compound and going to a private American school. And, you know, so I was around the diplomats and CIA officers and Army officers all my life. So, you know, when I entered that project, I didn't think I would have to do much research, but, you know, I was overwhelmed by the amount of research I had to do because I had been a kid. And what did I really know about working in the embassy? What did I know about what was happening in Japan and the government in 1980? And so, you know, for Rack and Ruin, you know, looking at the next novel, I thought, I think I'll go back to Rosarito Bay here because I know this town since I made it up. It should be pretty easy. But a lot of it came from, and this goes to the thematic elements in Rack and Ruin, a lot of this was just the reaction to going on tour for Country of Origin. And that's when I got really sort of hammered by all of these questions about race and social political questions. People would ask me about the Japanese. And, you know, first of all, I'm Korean-American. But they would ask me, you know, about Japan and the Japanese and their sexual mores and everything. And I thought, my God, you know, I really am tired of this. I'm tired of being a spokesperson for Asians and Asian Americans. And so that led into this whole thing of the character Lyndon Song, the sculptor, and, you know, he hits it big in his 20s in New York, but he pretty much walks away because he's tired of those elements of people always identifying him as an Asian American artist instead of as an artist who's Asian American. And, you know, I had that impulse myself to say, okay, you know, wouldn't it be great to just be able to walk away here and that I could continue writing a la J.D. Salinger or something, who was just in his house in New Hampshire and not publishing. You know, what really solidified that novel was when I was thinking about what Lyndon would do in Rosarita Bay. And, you know, I was thinking at first of having him, you know, running some sort of a local grocery store, maybe like the Get-Go or something. But then I thought, well, you know, that would be a stereotype in itself, an Asian American running a grocery store. But I was looking around and, you know, there are only three things that people grow because of the climate in that area: artichokes, pumpkins, and Brussels sprouts. And when I thought of Brussels sprouts, I thought, man, you know, there has never been a novel about growing Brussels sprouts. And I just love the idea because, you know, that's the one vegetable most people hate. And, you know, so somebody who's really dedicated to growing organic Brussels sprouts. And that's how the novel took off.
You're listening to A Talk at 10 on KRTS, Marfa Public Radio. My name is Tim Johnson, and I'm in the studio this morning with Don Lee. And Don is a Landon writer in residence currently here, and he's going to be reading from his work at the Marfa Book Company tomorrow, Saturday, July 17th at 6 p.m. It's open to the public, so we hope we'll see a whole bunch of you. I have one more question about Rack and Ruin before we move on to a new project.
Sure.
I also thought it was interesting to me that the Lyndon Song character moves to Rosarita Bay, and you know, outwardly he has this Brussels sprouts farm, organic Brussels sprouts farm. But simultaneously, we learn towards the end of the book that he also has his like sort of an ongoing art project, but it's within the context of his barn, and it's the sort of thing that basically it's site specific. But it's also very difficult to view. There's some sort of like urge to continue to make, but at the same time, still very privately. Is that something that you could identify with, or is that something you invented for him?
Well, you know, I told you about that one. I don't get a lot of fan letters. I don't want to mislead you here, but I did get another one email last week, and it was from a woman. And first, she was reading Yellow, and then, you know, she wrote to me about it, and then and I replied, but then she sent me another email just this morning and said, oh, you know, I started Rack and Ruin, and, you know, I love it, and, you know, I think you should keep writing. And it's such a weird thing to say to someone, you know, you should keep writing, as if I had a choice about this, you know, because I really don't. I mean, writing is just drudgery. You're, as opposed to a lot of different arts and as opposed to a lot of different careers, it's not a social thing. You're sitting there in a room alone facing a blank page. And what you also face are all kinds of doubts and fears and neuroses. And it's very painful to have to have that kind of discipline day in and day out and face those fears. And so, you know, if I could quit writing and be happy, I think I would if I had a choice. But I don't really have a choice. You know, I'll always keep writing, regardless of whether that work ever sees the light of day.
What are you working on presently?
Well, you know, I'm working on a new novel. I'm about three quarters of the way through it, I think, and it's a novel called Every Now and Then. And it's about three artists, two writers and a painter, who meet in college. And what we do is we see them at 10-year spans. 1 year when they're freshmen at McAllister College in Minnesota, and then in 1988, and then in 1998 in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and 2008. And so, you know, the one thing that's different about this project is that it's written in first person, which I've never done before. All of my books have and stories have always been in third person. And so, you know, that's one thing that's very different for me. But, I also was thinking about Cambridge. I left Cambridge 3 years ago after living in the Boston area for 23 years. And, you know, I thought about all the people that I knew who were then aspiring artists. And, you know, what it takes to keep going and to keep writing. And so this is kind of a love letter, this novel, to my days in Cambridge and also to all of those aspiring writers and artists that I knew.
You mentioned to me off air that this project got started in a way that was surprising for you, that it was maybe the consequence of abandoning a different project. You mind speaking to that?
Yeah, it was... Yeah, this is the first time I've had a false start with a novel. You know, something I've always feared. I heard Michael Cunningham say that, you know, when you're working on a novel, the thing that stops you with dread every single day is that it could fall apart. You could get 150 pages, 200 pages into it, and it could completely fall apart, and you realize that you don't have anything, and you're going to have to either start over or work on something else. And so this came from a book I started about a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, and I sketched it out and researched it for about 8 months, and then I went to Yaddo, which is an artist colony in Saratoga Springs last summer. And so for a month, I worked really hard on it. I wrote the first 30 pages. I outlined the entire thing. And then I even, you know, when I went to the Boston area, I gave a reading from it in a bookstore. It went over very well. And then, you know, I got back to Philadelphia in September, and I realized I just did not want to write this novel. It was fully formed. I think it could have worked. But I wasn't mentally, I wasn't there, and I didn't like it myself. And so that was a big deal, a big decision to say, okay, you know, I am going to just abandon about a year and a half work and start over and not really know what the next project was going to be.
So you did. You just went back and you reimagined.
Yeah, I kept about 3 pages of the previous project, but it's really an entirely different tenor and mood, and it's something I think that's probably more befitting of how I'm feeling these days.
How do you feel about the first-person narration at this point?
I like it, actually. You know, I never did it before because I didn't think that I would have a distinctive enough voice to warrant the first person, because the third person gives you a little bit more license and freedom. But I am finding actually that the first person has some real advantages, which is that you can omit or ignore things. And then it doesn't seem like a hole in the story. It actually seems like there's some sort of intentional avoidance or that you have an unreliable narrator of some sort. And that's kind of fun.
Will you be reading from the new work at the bookstore, or are you going to read older work?
Okay, yeah, I'm actually going to read a section from the college part, and I'm going to try to make it as entertaining as possible. It's Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll.
All right. I hope you heard that, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll, this Saturday, July 17th at the Marfa Book Company at 6 p.m. Our guest this morning on KRTS Marfa Public Radio has been Lannan writer Don Lee. He'll be reading tomorrow night at 6 p.m. at the Marfa Book Company, and it's open to everyone. Thank you very much for being on the air with us this morning.
Thank you, Tim.
All right. Up next is a song that Don has mentioned to me was one that, or actually it's a band, rather, that he's been listening to during the process of writing this new novel. So this one's for Don Lee. It's Clem Snide singing The Water Song.